We have recently received feedback that our intro music was too long. Not snappy enough. We have therefore doubled down with this even longer intro to hype up our Bethesda special. Enjoy. P.S. This is our fucking podcast, we do what we want. Much love. Grumpy Gamers. Kiss kiss.
I was born 87 years ago. For 65 years I've ruled as Tamriel's emperor. But for all these years, I've never been the ruler of my own dreams. I have seen the gates of oblivion, beyond which no waking eye may see. Behold, in darkness, a doom sweeps the land. This is the 27th of Last Seed, the year of Akatosh 433. These are the closing days of the Third Era, and the final hours of my life.
Grumpy Gamers.
Yeah, what he said. Welcome to Grumpy Gamers. And it's the Bethesda special. Woo!
Oh.
What the fuck was that?
So, yeah, I know. That was ridiculous.
Oh, woo.
So,
I've never heard you woo before.
I've never heard a woo
from your mouth. No.
I never have wooed in my life before now. So,
that's weird.
That's a special thing.
Don't do that again.
It's a Bethesda special. I went special. Okay, we're moving on.
What special?
So anyway, you're here listening to Pete, Ben, and Eddie as usual.
Hey guys.
Ben.
Yep. I thought I was drowned out by the other Eddie's booming voice just drowned me out. But hello.
There we go.
Oh,
good.
Sorry, Ben. I genuinely didn't hear you.
He didn't say a word. He's lying to us both.
Just your booming voice.
Yeah. Yeah. So today, as usual, we're going to be going through the news, the new releases, a bit of what we've been playing. And today's feature, if you hadn't guessed already, is all about Bethesda. So we're going to be spending an awful lot of time talking about Bethesda and getting into why you shouldn't really call it Bethesda. You should call it ZeniMax. But until then, we're going to start with the news.
Fantastic. Right. The first story this week. It's a big week for news because there's a lot of build up to Xbox Series X and the PS5. So everyone is very, very excited. So this is actually the Xbox Eve. So the new Xbox comes out tomorrow. Nice. And a lot of people are very, very excited, not because there's anything to really play on it, but new Xbox. So, hey.
Yeah.
Games will load up quicker, baby. We'll go through a few of the games that are actually arriving at launch for both consoles later on. But so the first story that we've got is from, it's basically the Digital Foundry PS5 review. So they did their tech review of the kit, fairly glowing. The load times are slightly longer than the Series X for, I think, pretty much universally. I've seen a lot of comparison videos where they put side by side for Red Dead Redemption 2, games like that, loading up. And the PS5 SSD does seem to load slower than the Xbox, but both are significant improvements on what we've currently got. So can't complain too much. A couple of big stories coming out of the Digital Foundry review. So if you've got a desktop monitor, and I know we all we all have them, and I was actually thinking about hooking my PS5 up to my desktop monitor. So I've got a 1440p kind of 2K desktop monitor. It doesn't actually natively support that. It will output 1080, and which is slightly disappointing. And then what that means in practice is that it'll output the 1080, and then your monitor will upscale it to 1440. But it's not quite the same. So you're not going to get the same kind of quality that you get out of your the game on your PC.
Okay.
Obviously, on a TV, it supports 4K up to 120 frames per second, which is excellent. It's what a lot of us are kind of used to on PC. Mm. The heat output and the power consumption for the games is better than the PS4, so it uses less power. So for the likes of myself who pay our own bills, then we it's better for us. But the biggest thing from all the reviews that have come out, I would say, is the DualSense controller with the haptic feedback. And it seems to surpass all expectations.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to this massively, and it sounds incredible.
Yeah, definitely. It sounds amazing. It sounds like the best reason to get a new PlayStation, to be honest. Like, I've heard that it's so sensitive with the triggers that it, like, when you're, like, accelerating the car, then it kind of rumbles the car, so you actually feel the power. If you're, like, sliding down a rope, then you kind of feel the vibration. It kind of makes you actually... I mean, fuck knows what it's going to do with the battery life, because, Ben, you know...
Oh, great point.
You know I like to change my batteries quite often.
Oh, boy. If we're playing of an evening and you're not changing a battery pack, I'm not playing with you.
No. Who is this imposter? Yeah.
Yeah,
so, God, can you imagine on them? I think they would last 10 minutes. Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, no, I mean, they sound amazing. And that's actually the biggest reason why I'm getting excited for this. So, yeah. We'll see what it's like.
No. I never thought a controller could get me excited for a machine. I mean, this to me is like the biggest generational leap that they're talking about. I know they talk about SSDs, faster loading times, great. I mean, they talked about loading times, didn't they? About like, this is a new age, the death of loading times.
Yeah.
Nah, I'm pretty sure loading times still pretty big.
I'm glad you come back to this, because when I heard you mention earlier, I kind of rolled my eyes. I mean, for a start, why have they pushed that so much? Why is that such a big thing? I mean, like, they keep on bragging on about it. How much of your life, compared to like this console, between the next and maybe the one after, are you going to waste? You know, like, I load up a game and I play that game for 4 hours. Maybe in the evening I'll do the same. So at maximum, if I turn on my Xbox now, it takes me, it does, like, with a normal game, not Warzone, it takes fucking 4 hours. With a normal game, it'll take me a minute. So let's say the new consoles, you boost it up in 15 seconds. So fucking what? That's a minute and a half out of my life a night. I mean, I can live with that. I can live with that.
I completely get what you're saying, Eddie. However... you play a game like Dark Souls, you'll feel the pain of loading screens. When you die 25,000 times, you'll feel that pain. So I am looking forward to that on Demon's Souls more than anything, quickly getting back into the game.
Well, I do also think that it's actually might be a sort of watershed moment, because a few years from now, are we going to be able to go back to games where you do have a long loading screen? Because once you've got used to it being less, it's like the tubes in London. I now complain if a tube takes 4 minutes, and they're like, that's ridiculous, it's 4 minutes, but you're so used to them being 2 minutes or less.
I've got to admit, didn't I tell you the other day, Pete, when I re-downloaded Total Warhammer, I downloaded it onto my HDD, and I had to reinstall, I had to transfer it over, even though it took another fucking 3 hours to download again. I had to, because it was unbearable.
Really?
I could not play it. It was so many times. Between every turn and between every load, I had to look at my phone or you know, turn on the TV.
But Eddie, didn't you 5 seconds ago say that it wasn't a big deal?
No. Yeah, but
right.
I mean, it's not a big problem. I mean,
but you just said.
The thing
that gets me is that,
like, with those games, like, you know, hardcore AAA PC games, and I understand, but those aren't the games I'm playing on the consoles anyway, so, you know, I'll be right.
No, I know what you mean. The thing that gets me is you see the new Spider-Man Miles Morales game load up, and it loads up in like crazy 5-7 seconds, yeah, something like that. But if you watch Red Dead 2, and I don't know whether it's just because the new games have been designed with the SSD in mind, because Red Dead 2 still takes like a minute to load into from a cold start into your game. And I don't know whether
won't be playing that then.
Yeah, that's the reason we won't be playing that.
Yeah, that's the reason why.
That's the only reason. I don't know whether it's the older games aren't kind of optimized to use it or something like that, so they're just a bit faster. But I'm really interested to see whether the new games that come out, whether they're just fucking lightning. But I still think loading times are still gonna be quite substantial, and it doesn't bother me massively. I mean, we've lived with it so long, and like you say, when Red Dead was like 2 minutes to load into it, I didn't even really notice. Yeah. I was more concerned with just the lack of life that I was using by playing that fucking game. But the Xbox does support 2K, well, the 1440p desktop monitor natively, so does support that. So it seems to me that the Xbox is the more flexible console. It's more powerful,
yeah,
but I don't know what matters more. And the next story, I think we'll have a bit of a chat after the next story about what matters more in this sense, because the next one, just similar, is that there's no way with the PlayStation 5 to move games off the SSD onto an external hard drive and then back on to the SSD. So, for instance, the PlayStation comes with, after the operating system, it's got about 667 gig worth of free space. And the Xbox has whatever it has, it's terabyte or whatever, just less than terabyte. But with the Xbox, you can have an external hard drive, and you just move games from the SSD when you don't want to play them, move them onto your hard drive, and then you can move them back on in 5 minutes or so. Yeah. And it's not an issue when you want to play them. But with the PlayStation, you have to basically uninstall the game, then you have to reinstall the game, and that could involve downloading like huge amounts of the game. So it could take, you know, our internet in this country isn't stellar everywhere. That's hours sometimes to download games. So, you know, the PlayStation, again, demonstrating that it doesn't have all of this flexibility. And I suppose my question to you guys would be, what do you value more? We've got the Xbox on one hand, which is the most powerful console, which seems to be very flexible and has this kind of like Netflix style Game Pass. And then we've got the PlayStation, which is which is powerful, obviously, but it's less flexible. It has these awesome first party games and this incredible controller. But how do you choose between them?
Well, I mean, sorry, Pete, go on.
I was just going to say, it's pretty easy for me because I have a PC.
Great point.
I have Game Pass. So it's going to be PS5 for the games I can't get.
Yeah. How about you, Eddie? I mean, we've talked about this, but that's the reason.
Yeah. Same reason. I've already got Game Pass. Love it. I've got an Xbox One, so it kind of means I kind of have to get the PS5. But on top of all that, I mean, this is going back to my old argument. So what? You have to uninstall the game and reinstall a game. I mean, you probably won't need to. So, for example, on my SSD, I've got the three games that I know I'm going to come back to in the next month. You know, realistically, what games you're going to play in the next month. There may be a time where you go, oh, I want to play that game. And what you do in the morning before work, you just put the download on. Boom, you're done by the end. Oh, do we live in a society now where, if I don't have what I want now, I'm going to lose my mind? I mean, the fucking Donald Trump, I guess, Donald Trumpism, has probably taken over the gaming industry, apparently. I don't give a fuck that I have to wait a couple hours to reinstall a game. That's absolutely fine. I'll do it in the morning. I'll do it when I take a dump or something. I don't know.
But isn't it infuriating when you've got about a two-hour window to play a game, you try to load it up, and then you have to do it?
Yeah, but you should know. I mean, I do get what you mean with updates, but I set my Xbox to update in the background anyway. So normally I don't have that problem. But yes, you're right. It is quite annoying when you just come and it says all you need to download and you lose 2 hours of game. Yeah, no, I do agree with that. But I'm not gonna lose sleep the fact that I have to wait a little bit more than the other console. So yeah, for me, because of the controller, because of the games, it's definitely not Xbox.
I think you do have a great point, Eddie, because a lot of these stories that I'm reading out here about what's not good and what's slightly better on the Xbox and, you know, the desktop monitors and all that, it's really like, it's not even icing, it's like the colour of the icing. It's like, it's that stuff that actually, at the end of the day, you don't really care about. And and like when people talk about the Xbox Series S and they say like, okay, well, it's only got a 500 gig hard drive and you have to download all the games and that kind of stuff. Yes, but like I've got my Xbox is 500 gig as well, and all I do is just take games off it and I put games on it. Like you're talking exactly how I kind of think. Like I kind of know what games I'm gonna play.
Yeah.
And most of the time, I mean, you can't do this with the S, but most of the time I do buy discs, which makes it quicker. Because I like to trade games, but even transitioning over to digital, I mean, there's rarely a time where I go, okay, it's Saturday, I want to play a game. Ooh, what do I play? I've already got it planned. Like exactly. I know what I'm going to play. So to me, it's not a massive deal.
I mean, the question it's leaving me is, are Xbox costing themselves business by being too flexible? You know, by having such a huge catalogue available on PC, I know they're owned by Microsoft, so I mean, I think obviously.
I think you're really stumbling across something there.
Mm. I mean, that might be something. The question, of course, is like Netflix, are they making enough of Game Pass to not care?
Yeah, and that's such a weird one because you wouldn't expect it. I mean, obviously it makes money because they've got this business model and they know what they're fucking doing. I'm not going to question that. What I'm going to say is that, I mean, all of us have the same reason for getting a PS5. Mm. For the first couple of years of the lifespan of the Xbox, for us, because we already own either an Xbox or a PC, like we've all got PCs, Eddie and I both have Xboxes, because we've already got those and we've got Game Pass, there is literally no reason to buy an Xbox. Because we're going to talk about it in a minute, like what comes out on day one. All of those games, I think all of them, you could just get it on Game Pass on the other console. Like it's fucking mental. Like, to me, Xbox, they're trying to bring in all the other gamers, the casual gamers. Like, you can see it in their advertising campaign and all that kind of stuff. But for me, like, maybe they're relying on the fact that hardcore gamers are going to buy it anyway, because, you know, Christmas will come around this year. If I've got some money,
you've already ordered one, haven't you?
I'll get one.
It's already
sure.
come,
of course. Yeah.
I was even looking the other day at a Series S, and I was like, "Well, they've come back in stock in Amazon." Do you want? And then I was like, "No, but I'd rather have the X." Why though? I've got a PC. I don't know why.
It's got to be said, Ben, as you say that, I love the fact that you mentioned the power consumption was down on the PS5. Yeah. As if that matters when you're spending 500 quid on a console.
Yeah, then thinking about buying another console, which I have no reason to buy. I mean, I've just spent obscene amounts on a PC just to play Warzone.
To play Warzone.
I play a free game.
Which you're already playing on your console.
So I'm already playing Warzone on my Xbox. Bought a PC, bought a fantastic monitor to play Warzone.
Most expensive free game I've ever heard of.
Oh, it is such an expensive free game. I've never spent a penny in game.
No, I'd love to. You wouldn't. That's disgusting.
I'd love to
pay on things for it. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, drop a couple of G's.
You've been wanting that fucking season pass room. Every month you're like, are we going to get it this time, lad? No.
I just want a fucking reason to buy a season pass. But anyway, that's a story for another time.
It is. What's the next actual news story?
Yeah, next actual news story is Take-Two are in talks to buy Codemasters. So Take-Two, I think the parent company of Rockstar. So obviously Grand Theft Auto, Red Dead kind of fame. They get in talks to buy Codemasters, who make a lot of racing games, F1 games, dirt games. I don't know if this is a big deal. I don't know if anyone has got any opinions on that. I don't really know. There's not too much to say. To be fair,
Have you got more to go on here?
I read the headline. I'm not going to lie. So if anybody else has read anything on it, then feel free to chip in.
So there's some great investigative journalism going on here. No.
Yeah. Well, I haven't got all the time in the world to pull this together, guys.
You know, when I actually typed in Take-Two Games, I remember seeing a couple on there. I'm trying to quickly look them up. I think Dark Colony might have been under their branch, which is pretty cool. Do you ever play Dark Colony?
No.
Fuck you guys then. And also, what was the other one that really surprised me? It was another... Oh, was it Max Payne? I think Max Payne might be... I mean, I might be talking shit now. I mean, it's going to be...
On that note, I'm just about to look at some games. So, Take-Two Games. Oh, did they publish at the Outer Worlds? Oh, I mean, wow. Obsidian made it, but they PGA Tour.
Can I just say I'm very impressed by the work you guys have done.
Mafia Trilogy.
Hey guys, you're gonna have to. I lost you for a good 20 seconds there. Can you timestamp that? Yeah, I got to remember to touch my controller every now and again, else the controller turns off. Fuck's sake. No, T2 Games. There's a few games that I saw that I had no idea would be, you know, under their, well, for one of their companies. There was a few like Max Payne, Dark Colony. I fucking love Dark Colony. I mean, we're going back some years now. I'd like to see actually when did Dark Colony come out. Oh, here we are. Dark Colony video game released. Fucking hell, 98% likes this game. Ooh. 1997.
Woo! Oh, wow. Yeah, that is rolling back a long way.
Yeah. Of course, your Civ games, Pete.
Okay.
Any Civ game. But I mean, as a whole, I mean, I don't really give a shit about this new story. But, I mean, people who like racing games, because Codemasters do fucking all the racing games, don't they? So I can only imagine this is going to be great for that side of the industry, don't you think?
So take to a publisher.
Oh, wow.
are they the publisher? I know they own Rockstar, but the company owns two main major publishing labels, so Rockstar Games and 2K. So okay, because I was wondering how they were involved with the Outer Worlds, and obviously Outer Worlds is made by Obsidian, so and I know PGA Tour was made by the people who made the Golf Club, so yeah, so they're the publisher, but I've got PGA Tour 2K21. It's very good.
Well, that is a fantastic non-news story.
Yeah,
good times. Really, really well delivered, guys. I could even hear typing in the background.
I was typing in Take-Two Games. Take-Two Games list.
That shows how well prepared you are for this one.
Well, actually, on this section on our notes, it is pretty blank.
I have seen that.
Did not read that one.
So, right, so
next one.
Mass
Effect Trilogy was announced. Huge news.
Huge news.
Well, after talking so much about Mass Effect last week, I mean, we actually all do very much respect that trilogy.
Yeah, and I mean, I love the fact that you completely wrote it off.
Oh yeah, no, moment. I mean, at a moment you go to war, Pete. At a moment you go to war. And you know, you're fighting for Pokemon, and when there's Pokemon in war, you take out everything.
I think the key thing to remember is that Dark Souls went out first.
Yeah, literally the first one to go out.
Yeah,
it's a garbage game. It died. Yes, but Pete, I know you love Mass Effect. What's going on with them with this story? When's it coming out?
Yeah, well, so obviously it was N7 Day on Saturday, which is a sort of a yearly celebration that the studio put on about Mass Effect. So that's when this was announced, and they threw together a huge cast reunion at the same time, which was really cool and really interesting to see how many of them they still have involved. Actual news on the Legendary Edition is it's a modernization, not a remake. So they're not planning to change any content, but obviously upgrade graphics, shaders, everything else, which I don't know about you guys, but I'm a little bit concerned about that because Mass Effect 1, I think, needs a bit of work.
It does. It does. Well, it was released, was it just after KOTOR 2?
Yeah, I think like a year.
Yeah,
a year
I mean, and as much as we love KOTOR, it doesn't graphically hold up well, does it?
No, even the gameplay doesn't hold up now.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. Yeah, yeah. Despite a million re-releases, yeah, it doesn't hold up great. So I think a lot of work could be necessary on that one, because a lot of people, when they get this trilogy, will want to play from back from the first to the third, weren't they? I mean,
oh,
and two and three were complete different games, weren't they?
Oh, so much better. I mean, Mass Effect 1, the exploration was much more well developed, and I enjoyed that aspect of it, but in every other aspect it's a long way behind. And I think that is going to be a problem. If they're not planning to remake anything at all on the series, it's still going to put me off playing that one again. Two and three, anytime.
Mass Effect 1 is basically KOTOR, though. I mean, it's got the same Jedi revelation. It's the same game. Come on.
I mean, I'm going to disagree with you there, but you made the same point last week, and it was equally invalid then, so I don't think I'm going to dissuade you at this stage.
That's very hurtful.
So on with the news part of this. So it is, as we've mentioned, all three games, all their DLCs, and all the limited edition packs as well. So it's literally every bit of content that ever went into the series. And it's available spring 2021.
That's pretty awesome.
Not far away at all. We could be seeing that in just under 3 months, really, potentially. They also added a nice little bit to the blog post about this with a teaser that they're working on the next Mass Effect title. They're working on the next expansion to the universe.
Now, I thought they had basically sacked it off after Andromeda. I thought, well, they were taking at least massive hiatus. Well, we say that, don't we? But did you briefly play Andromeda, Pete, or did you?
I did. Yeah.
I mean, I'd be quite happy to check it out again. I played it very briefly, but I didn't pay for it. I was playing someone else's game of it, I think, and I'd be happy to go back to it. But I think the main stuff that it was just a bad launch, wasn't it, Andromeda? It was a bad launch. The facial animations got a lot in the neck a lot. That was people's main gripe. I mean, I wouldn't really care about that, but yeah, I know there were a lot of storyline problems, and the end of the game didn't really finish anything off and that kind of stuff. But
yeah,
you know, I wouldn't be mad at trying it again.
So this is the thing. Because of this announcement over the weekend, I'm actually very much considering it. I am one of those who, despite playing countless hours on the main trilogy, I cut off Andromeda pretty quickly. And to be honest, it was even things like the changes to the combat, which now when I look at them don't look so bad, at the time really annoyed me, because it wasn't what you're expecting. Mm. And when it's a well-established series, you kind of expect the same thing, don't you? You kind of expect a refinement, but the
Absolutely.
Same thing. And
yep.
it's very different. But I do think with this news and with the potential news of another Mass Effect game, it might well be a chance for Andromeda to come back into the reckoning.
Well, I've got good news for you, Pete.
Oh.
That EA Play is joining Game Pass in conjunction with the Xbox launch. So,
nice.
So a lot of EA games will be coming available, and Andromeda is on the EA Play list. It's on PC as well, so in theory, fingers crossed, we don't know exactly how it's going to work yet, but the EA game should be available. Andromeda should be on Game Pass, I believe, in a couple of days.
Perfect. And what a natural segue into other new releases. So
absolutely. It's a big week, obviously, with the new game, with the new systems. So the big games, I'll highlight the big ones coming out on each of the consoles. So Yakuza Like a Dragon, that's on Game Pass, and that's Xbox exclusive. So I think it is going to be released on PS5 next year, I think. Mm. But yeah, for the moment, it's an Xbox exclusive. Demon's Souls, obviously, for PS5.
Obviously,
you've got
yeah.
Warhammer Chaosbane, that is on both
Ooh,
Xbox
nice.
And PS5. Now, I know it's been on PC for a while. I remember when we went to Res last year. It was last year,
yeah,
right?
It was.
That we were. Was it last year or was it the year before?
It was last year.
We've been a couple of times, but I didn't know which one because we sat in a for about 10 minutes before we went to see the computer game show podcast. Mm. We sat in a lecture, didn't we, on Chaos Mate?
Yeah, we did.
For about 50 minutes. It looked pretty cool. So I wouldn't mind checking that one out. Then there's Gears Tactics on Xbox, which is on Game Pass. I have played that one on PC, so it's coming to console for launch of the new console, but it's been on PC for a while. It's quite interesting. It's a turn-based version of Gears in like an XCOM quite type setting.
Okay, then
we've got Assassin's Creed Valhalla, which is on both consoles, and I actually watched a stream on Fextra Life on Twitch yesterday of Fextra Life playing it. To be honest, it put me off. I think I might because I want another game with my PS5 because I don't want to just continually die to Demon Souls and then get just hate life. So I was thinking about maybe getting Assassin's Creed Valhalla, and I just don't know. And I shouldn't have watched the stream. I don't know. It was just like it looked like Odyssey, and I was just like, oh. It's just another Assassin's Creed, isn't it? And I know that's kind of what it is.
That's funny. I saw the streams and I thought the opposite. I thought, I'm not going to like this. But then I watched it and I went, actually, there's a few things that I think looks pretty cool, and I'm probably going to get it. That's interesting.
The coolest thing I thought was that instead of riding a horse, he was riding a wolf. I mean, very
inaccurate. You got a crow?
Very inaccurate.
You got a crow instead of
this wolf was fucking massive. It was absolutely fucking wasai. So it's interesting, I suppose. I think it looks
more green. So that applies. I think that's more beautiful. They've got rid of the kind of seeing enemies from fucking everywhere job.
Yeah.
They got home base system, which I'm fucking huge. But every single game I've ever researched, first thing I type in is, do you have a home base?
But it's got
upgradable.
Can we just focus for a moment on the seeing enemies from everywhere? What?
So in the last one,
yeah,
I might have to edit this out because I could be totally wrong. In the last one, you could, With your eagle, you go up and you could tag enemies from anywhere, and you could see them from anywhere.
Yeah,
with this one, you can't do that. You can put your raven up and you can like look at ways to like get in the camp and shit, but then you have to be near them, and then you like spring your I think they call it like Nordic eye or something. I can't fucking remember. But then you can like see the red outlines, because I fucking hate those things in games where once you tag someone, you can see them when they go behind a wall. What kind of fucking system is that? I'm sorry. Fair enough.
Thank you for clarifying, though.
You do like tagging in Warzone, though.
Oh, I tag all the time in Warzone. I watch that a little. Yeah, but it's broken. It's broken. Why should that be a thing? Do you know what I mean? The same reason I fucking hate third person. I know you love it, Pete. But like in PUBG, you just hide behind a wall, you can see everything behind that wall. You can see anyone running up. The other guy hasn't got a fucking clue you're standing behind that wall, but you can, look over there. Broken. Don't like it.
Yeah, I like the sound of the home base stuff, and I'm glad you brought that up, because that is the stuff that differentiates it for me. And that's kind of what makes it the Viking thing, and I'm really, really pleased that they've done that. I think the thing is, I wanted to get Cyberpunk on the day of launch. So now I think, and I do think Cyberpunk moving out of the way is obviously going to help Assassin's Creed, because people are going to be looking for another game, and I don't really want to go back to Spider-Man. I liked the first one, really, really liked it, but I don't really want to get Miles Morales for some reason. I just not feeling it. I don't know what it is. I think I'm burnt out on it. It's the last one I thought was really, really good, but ultimately, you know, did you ever play the Batman Arkham games? Arkham Asylum and stuff like that. Like, it was really enjoyable, wasn't it? It was good. Mm. And Spider-Man 1 did the combat even better. But would you want to play Oh, I don't know. I just can't be bothered to do it again. But it's great.
Yeah. To be honest, you don't have to convince me. I just don't like Spider-Man, so I tend not to get into his games.
That's fair enough. I did think the last one on PS4 was excellent. So there is no reason why I wouldn't like this, and I definitely would like this game. It's just that I just don't want it right now.
You're ordering it as we speak, though, aren't you?
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
two weeks now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the bad thing that I do is that I'll get the PS5 and I'll have Demon's Souls, and I'll play Demon's Souls a bit, and I'll go, okay, this is nice, but I'd like something else, and then I'll immediately get something else. Immediately, I'll just go to Smith's or I'll order stuff online, pick it up straight away. So I'm quite bad for that, going, oh no, I'm only going to spend X, and then as soon as it comes around, I'll dip into the wallet straight away.
But yeah.
So the next game, Bugsnax, that's on PS5, PS5 exclusive. That is on that's a PS Plus game for the first 2 months of its life. It's going to be free on PS Plus. Now, what I like the sound of this one. It's got a lot of press coverage. It's probably the most hyped game for no reason in the world. People thought it might be a stealth horror game, but it's not. It's definitely not. But I did watch a review of it today, and they said it's a bit like Pokemon. You got to catch them all. So I thought, okay.
There we go.
You pre-ordered it?
No, it's on PS Plus. So I just gotta reactivate my PS Plus.
Yeah, but I assume you're gonna give them money as well.
Yeah, I'll give them money as well.
Yeah.
I gotta support our developers. next game, Godfall on PS5. Again, it was probably one of the first announced. I think it was the first announced game for PS5 at the Jeff Keighley Games Awards event. And it look, I don't know. I think it's gonna tank, but I think it's one of those games that people will buy on day one because they don't care about buying dog shit games for your new console, so you're going to get it. So.
Yeah, what was the last one? Do you remember Rise? Was it Rise?
I bought that. I love Rise.
I know you did. I borrowed it and I went, fuck, this is shit. I mean, it looked stunning though, didn't it?
The problem with Rise was that they had like four enemies and they had the same models for those enemies. So like every enemy looked identical.
Yeah.
And like if they... I just thought, what the fuck? It looked amazing. It looked so stunning.
Yeah,
I actually really enjoyed it. Like, I completed it.
It was garbage. It was the most linear game I think I've ever played. And because everyone looked the same, it felt like you were doing the same shit. The first minute, I was amazed. I was like, this game's fucking brilliant. Second minute, that's a bit weird. That's a bit like the first minute. Mm. 2 hours later, what the actual fuck? They have fucking mugged me off.
Yeah, but the first minute was amazing. The first minute was amazing, and then you got to relive that 500 times.
Well, at least they didn't keep you for too long, though.
So thank you. It wasn't that long. The whole thing of everyone looking the same was fucking ridiculous. But it did look stunning. So
yeah.
And then Astro's Playroom is also, it comes free with the PS5. Now that's the one that really demonstrates the haptic feedback on the controller. I've been watching a lot of videos on this, and that looks like when you're walking through sand and on metal and stuff, that the controller is supposed to really show itself off there. So I'm looking forward to that. There's also loads of upgrades for older games, like Ark's getting an upgrade, No Man's Sky, Pete.
Yeah,
getting an upgrade. Numerous others, forgotten which ones, didn't note them down. But so,
Ben, I'm sensing there was less prep that's gone into this news report today.
maybe marginally.
Less shit given.
Marginally less shit given. Hey, we've got an audience now. We've done the hard work.
As always, if you've got any feedback or suggestions, we are available at podcast@grumpygamers.co.uk.
Yes.
Any help with these people would be appreciated.
Good stuff.
So, with that out of the way, should we tell everyone what we've been playing?
Cool.
I think so. Eddie, why don't you lead?
Why the fuck do I always go first? I knew you were going to say me.
Because we want to hear more of your beautiful voice.
Why is it
voice?
Always me?
I've just been
Pick
talking.
Pick someone else.
I've just been talking.
Pete, you didn't even fucking do a game last week. You should go first.
No, fine.
That's a great point.
Jesus.
He makes a great
Jesus.
Point.
Jesus. Yeah, you'd think he wasn't keen or anything. Well, I mean, I've been playing Celeste, to be honest. And that was a bit of a surprising choice for me, but it came from to be honest, not knowing what I want to play, because I wanted Cyberpunk and it's not here yet. So, you know, time to dabble. And yeah, after we talked about it last week, I decided to give Celeste a try. And I've given it a try and I probably won't again. It's it's very, very reminiscent of the old school platformers. The original Mario, for one. It's insanely difficult and you will die probably more often than you die in Dark Souls to get through this game.
Behave.
Well, I mean, I racked up 370 deaths on one level at one point.
Oh, that's a bit soul-destroying.
Yeah. And to be fair to it, there's a point where once you get into a rhythm and you start rolling, it's a fantastic passage of play for you. But after a little while, you start to feel like it's only the keystrokes that matter. You lose your immersion in it, and you realize that it's just the timing of the keystrokes that's doing everything. And I know that's the case with every game we've ever played, but it becomes noticeable. So that's what sort of pulled me out of Celeste. Now, I got halfway through in two sittings, so clearly it hooks you in once you're there, but it's not one that I'm feeling particularly keen on going back to. Mm-hmm. The visuals are old school platformer. The music's pretty good. The music's haunting. And what I've seen of the storyline is nice. There's not enough storyline for me either, but it is a nice storyline when you see it. So obviously that was out on Game Pass on November the 5th. So that is another reason I decided to go for it. But yeah, I mean, if you've got 8 hours and you want to kill it with a game, then go for it. If not...
So I'm looking, obviously, when you mentioned how many times you die, I wanted to see what the average number of deaths were. Yeah, people were saying, I mean, you to die three, is that one level? Is it one chapter?
Yeah, that was one particular chapter.
I mean, that seems a little above average.
Oh, it was by far my worst one. It was horrendous.
But they do say, so somebody said 663 deaths for the main story. Somebody said 1,500. Somebody said 7,000.
So actually I'm under that average.
We'll see. What I hear about this game, I hear that it is actually a bit of a lot of people think it's a bit of a masterpiece. I think one of the big selling points that I've heard is that it has a lot of difficulty options, a lot of ways to make it a bit more accessible to a lot of players, which again is a massive theme in gaming at the moment.
It really is. But I mean, for me at least, and we talked about this before, didn't we? I want to experience a game as it's meant to be played. Mm. So I wasn't going to play with anything on those settings at all. And yeah, you can see why they designed it that way. And you do learn by dying just as you do in Dark Souls and all of that type of that style of game. But it's... this one doesn't hold me as much as many of the others.
But do you think that if the game was slightly easier, it would have held you for longer if you were clearing stages a bit more?
No, not okay. Really. I think for what it is, it's a fantastic proponent. And it is that super challenging platformer. And if that's what I'm looking for, I will go back to Celeste. But it's not something I look for often.
Well, it's funny you said that earlier, because for me, I rate a game more on what you said, being drawn back to it, than its actual enjoyability. For example, I know when I love a game, when I'm in work and I think of it and I go, oh, fuck, what happens if I do that on that level? Well, that might be better. Yeah. Or why don't I buy that thing? You know, and then it gets me for the rest of the working day excited about going home and playing it. Yep. You know what I mean? And that, to me, is far more important than... I mean, for example, waking up in the morning. I wake up normally about an hour before I start work because I work from home, and I play computer for half an hour because... Mm-hmm. But if I don't have that game that gets me excited and up in the morning, then I go, what the fuck's the point? And it's the same with work. Like, in your work, it's 2 o'clock and you're like, oh, what have I got on tonight? And if you're not enjoying the game you're playing, you go, I'll just play a bit of game, maybe have a bath. You know, for me, I think it's more important wanting to play a game than actually having fun when you're in it. So,
yeah.
Yeah, you make a great point, I think, Eddie, because... Yeah. But
I always do.
That's a very strong comment.
I do think, like, I don't get it that often though lately. I think that's because we're waiting for a lot. I'm waiting for Cyberpunk. I'm waiting for Demon's Souls. I'm waiting for the PS5. But I don't have that. Like, I play games every single day, but I've got nothing which I'm like, I cannot wait to play that tonight, or I can't wait to get back to that.
And
so,
this is what I meant as well, though, is that at this moment, all I'm having is that I can't wait to play Cyberpunk.
That's going to be amazing.
That's where I am, but it means every other game I'm not really as hooked into.
Yeah, I do.
I get that. I do get that. It's like when, like last week, when I a couple of weeks ago, when I bought three games on the Xbox sale, I decided to play the shittest one first, then the less shit one, then the least shit one, and that was my mistake, because when I was playing the shittest one, I went, ooh, I'm looking forward to playing that one next. So I didn't get into that game. And then I did that with the next one. And then the next one, I went, it's not RimWorld, so let's go play RimWorld. So, yeah, there we are.
Yeah.
So is that what you've been playing this week?
Is that a trick to get me to go next?
You're up next, so yes.
Oh, am I? All right, okay. Fucking hell. All right. No, I have been playing Sheltered.
Okay.
Yes. Have heard of it? Yeah.
Do tell us more.
Sheltered. So it's by Unicube. They're kind of a little independent company. I don't think they've done any other games looking at their website. It was released in 2015. It's kind of a post-apocalyptic survival game, but it's like one of your two garbage games. It's like a side scroller 2D, and it looks like absolute shite, like your Celeste game, really.
That is the low blow. Matt makes games is going to be furious.
No, I'm sure
when they listen to this.
I'm pretty sure they're called Extremely Okay Games now.
I think that's
okay.
Previously known as Matt makes now.
But yeah, probably actually. Yeah. You said his game looks like dog shite.
It does. But Sheltered does too. So, you know.
Wow.
But Sheltered, you know what? Like, I'm going to talk a lot of shit, like I do with every single game I talk about. But it's a good game. So you control, like, your family in a shelter. And the mission is to survive, basically, for as long as possible. And you can do, so you build up your base sort of thing, you get things in that help you survive, and you go exploring and you try and find things to build back in your base, and you can find things to help you build things, and you can find people out on the wasteland as well who might trade with you, might kill you. You know, it's a good game, because even though I started playing and I went, this looks like fucking shit. I mean, it was made in 2015, but it looks like it was made in 1995. Like, it that bad. Yeah. I mean, you know what I did, right? But before, like an hour ago, I went, I still can't believe it's made in 2015. So I typed in games that are released in 2015. Right, do you know what games are released in 2015? You look at Sheltered, then look at these games. Witcher 3. The Phantom Pain. Star Wars Battlefront. And then you look at fucking this shite and you go, what has happened here? Now I'm all on board. I'm all on board for the whole, oh, looking retro. But there's got to be limits. There's really got to be limits.
It is a tiny indie game.
It's an indie game. Have you seen how many pixels are on the screen?
Five.
Jesus, five at a time. If it goes up to six, it crashes. I mean...
Eddie, you, every week it seems like you get furious over games looking absolutely shite. But one, I've got 2 points in this. One, why buy games that look shite? And two, your favourite game of the world looks like shite?
Absolute shite. Your favourite game looks terrible.
Shelter's been on my wish list for fucking ages, like 2 years. And it went down to £2.50. So I went, you know what? Just to get out off your wish list and just try and see what it's like, just buy it. And again, I'm fucking saying how shit it is, but I love it. It's a very, very good game. So let's get back on track. It's a very good game in the sense of, right. So I was there. I was playing it. I was like, this looks like shit. But then I realized that I'm running out of water, and I'm like, oh, fuck, hang on, my kids are going to die in a minute. They're not drinking water. So, and then I send someone out and I realise that, oh, fuck, I haven't got any food and nothing's been snared in my trap yet. Holy shit, I really hope. And then all of a sudden it starts raining and you're like, yes, I've got water. Or like you're going out and you find like the really rare ingredient that you needed to like expand your shelter or build like a fucking stove or something, and you generally get like excited, and the combat is a bit turn-based-y. It's not very good, but again, when you win, you actually do feel great. So I know I'm talking shit about it, but I think it's a good game. It's not RimWorld, so obviously there's number one. It's got a lot of elements that you make you go, why don't I play a better survival strategy game? And that's a big problem, but for £2.50, fucking brilliant. Absolutely. Brilliant.
So this is also £2.50 this week on the Switch as well.
I tell you what Ben, I reckon bloody good Switch game.
Yeah, probably nice. Is a bloody good Switch game. Yeah,
yeah, it looks like absolute shite, which fits in well.
Yes, yeah, probably high-end graphics.
I've got a similar game on Switch.
That'll break it. Yeah,
Eddie, have you ever tried This War of Mine? Because I've got that on Switch, and it sounds incredibly similar, and it looks a lot better.
Yeah, yeah. No, I've done plenty of research. That's been on my wish list on and off for a while. I don't like... It's very dark and gritty, isn't it?
Very dark, yeah. I mean, it's kind of political. It's very dark. It's actually on the education read/playlist in Poland. The only game that I know of is actually on a... like a secondary school kind of
play this
game. Yeah, the pioneers, Poland.
who would have thought that?
Who would have thought? But they are. I mean, they recognise this. I mean, it's and that also is a kind of critically acclaimed survival game that I don't know. You probably bought this because of the price, but the if that does ever come down in price, then I think it'd be right up your street.
I don't like the same aspects of Sheltered. I don't like the side scroll thing. And even though I do like gritty games, I like gritty games when it's like first person, not like when it's strategy games. Do you know what I mean? And you know what I don't like about games like this, and this is weird, is there's always a limited amount that you can go out and scavenge. Same with This War of Mine,
yeah.
Now, when I've done my research, I remember looking at the map and there were only a certain like limited buildings that you could go to in this map area. And then it made me, I love to play a game that I think this can go on forever. Do you know what I mean? I don't like knowing that this will end in a time. Even games like Skyrim and Fallout, I know that there's enough side shit for me to play this game forever. Yes. So I play them. Games like this that I know there's limited amount of places to scavenge, and therefore it's gonna come to an end. So I don't get excited about them. Well, do you know what I mean?
How difficult did you find it? Because when I played This War of Mine, every game I just get stabbed to death, like always mortally wounded. Like I'd leave my mate in the house overnight or something. I'd do a bit of scavenging, come around, he's been stabbed, he's dead. Right. Great, and then I'll go out to like hunt a bit, and then I get stabbed. It's like, well, why does everyone get fucking stabbed?
It's like, so I take it you've been playing a nice positive game this week, then, Ben, to take off that feeling.
Yeah, well, actually, I'm not sure positive is the right. Well, I don't know. It looks fantastic, though. It doesn't look like the dog shit that Eddie's been playing. But I've been playing A Plague Tale: Innocence, which is on Game Pass. It's actually been on my kind of to playlist for a while now. When we're thinking about games playing to play each week kind of for this, it's encouraging me to go through like my catalog, especially on Game Pass, because there's just so many bloody games on there.
That's so easy, isn't it? Yeah,
I had this downloaded from ages ago because it got great reviews. It got solid kind of like 8 out of 10s, and I'd seen some kind of streams at the start of it, so I was like, okay, let me get into this. But it's so much better than I thought it was going to be. I really, really, I don't know what I expected, but my God, does it look stunning. Okay. On PC, it looks absolutely awesome. So it's an action adventure horror stealth game. That's kind of how they position it. You play as this girl called Amicia. She's like a young kind of noble girl. It's set in 1348. Mm-hmm. So during the Hundred Years' War, France, England are the English are kind of invading France, and your brother, kind of who you don't know at all. You know he exists, but he's kind of kept under lock and key kind of thing because he's ill. So your mum kind of sees to him a lot. So you don't really know your mum that well. and you don't know your brother kind of at all. But okay. Basically the English come, they kill your noble kind of dad, your father, and they fucking also kill spoilers. Your mother.
And that's
right at the start. It's right at the start.
Jesus Christ, Ben, I was looking forward to playing this.
First 15 fucking minutes. First hell. 15. But basically, it's like you look after your brother, and you're on the quest to kind of almost cure his illness. But that's kind of the premise of the.
Okay.
It's got those kind of like Ico from the PS2 game.
Yeah.
Like feel where you're that holding the hand of your brother, and then you kind of like tell him to stay. You do a thing. You'll kind of stealth past something. You'll tell him to come to you. You'll throw some things over there to distract people and stuff like that. It's got some quite nifty little mechanics for that kind of stuff. It's all quite simple. The puzzles are quite simple. But it's quite emotive, the kind of journey that you go on.
It sounds like just one long Skyrim follower quest so far.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's very linear. It's the character development really that I like. It's very much a narrative game. So the main thing that's going on, that's called A Plague Tale, is that there's rats everywhere, and these rats are fucking ferocious. They will maul you in seconds, and I've been mauled many times. Chow down on. But and she's an amazing with a slingshot, so you can like hit out lights because the light makes the rats not come with you near you. You can hit out lights, and then the guards will be fucking overrun with rats and things like that. It's got the cool little mechanics, but my god, does it look good?
Yeah.
I cannot emphasize enough, like, it's probably the best looking game I've played on my PC. Absolutely fantastic. But when I was playing this, and because it's quite story driven, I thought it was fantastic for a potential Let's Play. So I have actually been filming this game for a Let's Play to go on our YouTube channel, which will be kind of available in the next couple of weeks. So because some of the first content that we actually put on our YouTube channel, the Grumpy Gamers channel, will be this Let's Play of A Plague's Tale. Now, it seems perfectly suited to it, to be honest. So we'll make an announcement on that in the next couple of weeks when it goes up, but look out for it.
Perfect. Okay, fantastic. So expect that in a couple of weeks, assuming we get approved, of course.
That's true. That's taking longer than expected, isn't it?
It is. So I'm sure everyone's wondering why we led into the episode with an insanely long rendition of the intro to Oblivion, which, let's be honest, is worth it just listening to it anyway. But
which also the main reason was,
we're definitely getting sued for it. Yeah, we really are. But the main reason was that all the discussion about Skyrim in last week's episode made us think about Bethesda again. And yeah, we decided we wanted to talk a little more about that. And I think Ben in particular, you had some views, didn't you?
Yeah, the main thing with Bethesda at the moment for me is that it may have lost a bit of its magic. I mean, we've had Fallout 76 come out. We've had other games made by, well, Outer Worlds made by Obsidian that's come out and kind of shown them up at their own game. they've used the same engine for what seems like ages. The Fallout games, Skyrim and Elder Scrolls, and they're due something else. They've obviously got the new Starfield, which has been in development for God knows how long, with no real end in sight, or I don't know. And Elder Scrolls 6, we've seen the tiniest snippet of almost a trailer when it just brought up Elder Scrolls 6 on a screen. To me, it seems like Bethesda has gone backwards in the last couple of years. And I think that's, and we are planning to do a bit of a deep dive, and I think we're going to go through, we're going to try and get a bit hyped, and then we're going to try and conclude whether Bethesda has lost its magic.
You see, that is such a strong statement to make. And I mean, you can understand it. I tried Fallout 76, and I too didn't really enjoy that one very much. And Eddie, I think you had the same sort of response to 76, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, fucking but, hell. I mean, if I had to answer Ben's question in one word, yeah, absolutely. Fucking yeah. And that would be my extended words on top of that. Fucking hell yeah.
But I think we have to, if any company that's ever made games is allowed a blip, I think Bethesda's surely got to be that one.
How long do you qualify a blip for? Sorry. Before we get into this. Or should we do that later?
We'll do that later.
Do that later, babes.
You are making me furious. So yeah, we'll save that for later. But we're not a gaming business or gaming industry podcast. We're a gaming podcast. So we're going to focus mostly on the games they have produced. And I think when you get right down to it, you realize that one miss is nothing compared to it. So to go right back to the very beginning of it all, you've got Bethesda Softworks, founded in 1986. And they messed around with a few things. They came up with the first real-time physics engine for a game called Gridiron, which came out on Atari, and then proceeded to sell that on to Madden Football.
As you do.
And the reason we're so confident in using their soundtrack is obviously Bethesda aren't the type of company to sue anyone.
Except
Madden Football instantly when they didn't release another Gridiron game and just adopted the engine into Madden. So that's a good start.
We've got no risk
for using a very long segment in a very unrelated way. Fantastic. Zero.
It's all over YouTube. I mean, literally. Surely there's no risk. I mean, they do sue everybody in the world. But
but
not us, baby.
But when you get right down to it, first, the first major game as Bethesda is Arena, which is also the first of the Elder Scrolls game. And they then followed it up with Daggerfall, both of which were huge critical successes. And Daggerfall in particular was using procedural generation a long time before most of the industry was. And it still remains one of the biggest games ever made because of that fact. And both of those did amazingly well, but a little before our time. And then they tried to go a bit smaller and a bit more focused with a couple of games called Battlespire and Redguard, which didn't do too well. But you then come to the crux of it for me, which is Morrowind and the start of the Elder Scrolls in the wider gaming network, I'd say. Morrowind was released in 2002. It's absolutely vast. They actually tripled their staff to build the game, and it apparently took 100 man years to create it. And you can tell when you play it because all of the objects are handcrafted.
100 man years.
Yeah.
Jesus,
I mean,
Christ.
Right? That tells you just the level of detail in it. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely huge. It's vast. You're playing on the island of Vardenfell. And
what other type of years are there?
Places there?
There's man years.
There's woman years, but that
woman
takes
years.
Twice as long.
Animal years.
God. I don't
dog years. Dog years.
Okay, so
does that mean the dogs create the game?
That's seven times a man year.
Yeah, 700 dog years.
So it takes 700 dog years for them to make this game.
It's
carry on, Pete. Carry on.
Counted dogs, though.
And despite looking back on it nowadays, oh, God, really? Despite looking back on it these days, the graphics at the time, the gameplay, everything about it was hugely advanced. And it won a swathe of awards for that. And this was the first game that got me into the series. And it was, I think you mentioned it earlier, Eddie, it's one of those games where you felt you could do anything. In fact, I even eventually in that game, you got to a level of power where I flew constantly and could shoot fireballs that killed everyone within about 100 meters. And I think it's the overwhelming sense with that game was the more time you put into it, the more powerful you became. But there was always something new you were going to find. And I've been hooked ever since.
Was that a game of your youth, Pete? Was it?
Oh, of course it was. Yeah, it was the original Xbox days. Yes. And it was one of those that you could come home after school and sink hours into every day if you wanted to.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I definitely did. I don't even want to imagine the count of hours that went into Morrowind.
thank God they don't have records of games like that. Thank
I know.
For that.
I know. That Steam would make me terrible.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
And then after Morrowind, a couple of years later, they acquired a little series called Fallout.
Never heard of it.
Well, a couple of years later still, they released Fallout 3, which I'm pretty sure you have heard of, Eddie.
Never heard of it.
How's the how would the Steam count look on that one, Ed?
I don't want to fucking know. Actually, I kind of do know, but luckily I've got on Xbox and PC. So
it, share the load.
Exactly, just so it doesn't look so bad.
See, I'm actually coming out from the outside here because I just, you know, despite loving games, I never really played Fallout for more than a couple of hours. It just really wasn't my setting for a game. I just didn't. I wasn't really feeling it. No, I didn't like good. I didn't like good games.
Yeah, it wasn't a side scroller fucking Switch game. It wasn't a fucking Mario Kart game. Yeah, fair enough.
Very hurtful, but no, I just didn't. I didn't really get on with the setting, but by all accounts, Fallout 3 was an absolute fucking masterpiece, wasn't it?
Yeah, Fallout 3. Yeah, one of probably the best game when it came out. Overall, it sold 12.4 million units sold worldwide. So obviously, that's just a little bit. Looking back at it, and I tried to draw a few things down that made me go, holy shit. The storyline itself with the side quests. And you know what was really good about Fallout 3 was that you kind of made a difference in the world. Do you know what I mean? I think it's the first game, well, I can remember, where when you did something, it actually changed the world. Like when you blew up, I actually never blew it up, but I've watched the YouTube routes to blowing up the town. I'm a nice guy.
Oh, Megaton.
Yeah. Yes, even I did that. Megaton. I did that, Mark.
Yeah. Well, there you go. You're one of those people, are you? But the game itself, it was so well written, wasn't it? No mission seemed the same, and there were so many different variants of missions in the sense of some were dark and gritty, and you thought, holy shit. And then some were actually funny, you came across that old man with a sniper and he was shooting. You know what I mean? There was funny little things and it was just so well written. Each side quest made you feel invested, which is difficult for side quests because they're normally, I'll just go fetch that or go kill that guy. So, the atmosphere in the game, absolutely incredible. Yeah. Tense. It felt, go on.
One of the things that you mentioned there was this was one of the first games that you played that where you did something where you thought it actually affected the game. And when we were, in case nobody listened last week, we did our top three definitive RPGs. when we went through our RPG list last week, when we were thinking about what is an RPG, but when you actually consider some of these RPGs is that truly what an RPG is, where you can affect the world? It's like The Witcher,
where the world changed around you because of it. Yeah,
and Bethesda do see masters at that. So not all RPGs are capable of doing that. Just got a million buzzes on my phone from Xbox saying new games were added to Game Pass.
Well, there we go. Now we know the new releases are newly released.
I thought that was Bethesda saying you're being sued.
Yeah, well, it's a game announcement.
Oh, grumpy gamers are getting sued by Bethesda.
New perk on Disney Plus, Xbox
that,
Game
that
Pass.
That took right, longer than right. I thought, to be honest.
Good end, not a good thing. Ben, totally agree with you. That's what Bethesda's always been really good at doing, haven't they? And Fallout 3 is no exception to it. I generally think it's probably the first game that I thought I'm actually making a difference. Things are actually happening around me. But because of that, and because of the atmosphere and everything, it made you want to play it over and over again. Do you know what I mean? I remember completing it, and every other game, I normally go, oh, I've completed it, put it to the side. But then I remember going, what happens if I do that instead of that? Oh, what happens if I do that? What happens if I side with that person instead of that person? So it made me play it again and again and again. And the fact that the side quests are so good, I God knows how many hours I threw into that. They had so many new things. Fallout 3 was the new... The VAT system, wasn't it? With the limb damage and shit like that. So it made it really... I remember when I'd shot a guy in the head for the first time and he flew across the thing in that cutscene kind of thing. And I thought, holy shit, that's incredible.
And I think this is the other thing we can say for sure about Bethesda, regardless of what's happened. They know how to make a big moment. Because my overwhelming memory in Fallout 3 is following the giant robot, Liberty Prime.
Yeah.
As you charge over the bridge towards the water purification plant, whatever it is, the water place. And that is forever etched in my memory. And I think it was in one of the DLCs, Liberty Prime's death as well, is another one that they stay with you. And in Morrowind had similar bits to it. I think it is a common theme throughout the games, where in Morrowind you realize that through your actions, you can make a moon crash into the capital city. Like, it's the big moments are one of the key things for Bethesda.
There are so many awe-inspiring moments, aren't there? You know, exactly. With all the games, there are so many.
Exactly.
But yeah, having said that, though, I reinstalled Fallout 3 about a year ago, and it's difficult to play now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's the map seems tiny, fucking hell. And I remember playing it thinking the map was huge, but the map seems minuscule now, and everything feels a bit sluggy and clunky. But I mean, you know, it's an old game. So I'm not holding that against it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not by any way telling anyone to go and replay Morrowind now, because
yeah, God, I tried that. Holy shit! The graphics on that—it's one of Ben's fucking Twitch games or whatever the fuck he plays.
Hey, let's be honest. The facial animations are up there with Andromeda's. That's what we know for sure.
Yeah. Oh shit! Was that your phone buzzing again? We've got another law case against her.
That's probably slander from Mass Effect.
Can't wait to play it. Can't wait to play Andromeda.
No, it's going to be fantastic.
Might as well play Morrowind.
But speaking of the big moments in games, I think the intro to the show showed us that another of their games was good at this, and that would be Oblivion. And Oblivion, for one thing, it's got an incredible storyline, as we've talked about with the others. But it's also, they brought in incredible voice actors. Actually, as they had done with Fallout 3, didn't they have Liam Neeson in Fallout 3?
Liam Neeson?
I think Liam Neeson plays your dad in Fallout 3, yeah.
Whoa.
And in Oblivion, as you heard in our intro, Patrick Stewart plays a major role. Short, but a major role. And then when he's gone, the man who follows up is Sean Bean. And another thing that I think sets Oblivion apart from all of them, actually, is that you don't play the main hero. You play the sidekick to the main hero. The main hero is Sean Bean's character in it, rising to his inheritance. And the whole time, you're basically just there to enable him as he goes about taking over the world. And it had a much tighter storyline than Morrowind, which was a big plus, because while I think Morrowind was well ahead of its time, it's something that needed improvement moving forward. And the improvements on graphics and everything else meant you finally had games where you could stand atop a cliff and see a view.
Yes.
And it was an epic view. And Eddie, I know you played Oblivion a huge amount as well as I did. So
yeah,
you can speak for just how beautiful that game was when it came out.
I think that's that game is what made me probably fall in love with gaming, like not enjoy gaming, like fall in love with gaming. I remember, I think it's probably like the third mission, if you will, to go and see the Chosen One, Sean Bean, back up on top when he's under protection of those guys. Yeah, and I remember running up that hill, and I remember just slugging along, and I don't know what made me turn around, probably an enemy or something, but I turned around and I went, fucking hell, that is beautiful. I mean, don't get me wrong, you install it now, you don't think that. But I remember at the time going, holy shit, that is a stunning view. And that's ridiculous. Like, I remember at the time thinking, that should not be a thing in computer games. Do you know what I mean? And it was, oh, God, yeah, absolutely. Fell in love. I think that was the day when I went, you know what? I'm going to play computer games for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? I might just do this hobby for the rest of my days. This very enjoyable thing.
This fantastically enjoyable hobby.
When I was playing all the games before, really enjoying it. Nope.
Now
I've seen a nice view. You know what it was? It was, I don't need to go outside anymore.
Yeah. Some people go, I could do that in real life. No. I could get my views all the time.
Games. Oh, that'd be so stupid.
Of course, they're the ones losing out right now in lockdown, aren't they? So, I mean, hasn't Eddie just played the long game?
Thriving. Oh, yeah. No, we shouldn't joke about that.
But again, it was Oblivion was a game of the big moments. In fact, the whole Oblivion Crisis, the basis of the storyline, is one big moment. And the first time you see the gates appear, I think it, one of the smaller towns, is it Braville? Something like that, where you go. And the gate to Oblivion opens is another huge moment that I think many gamers remember fondly. And they do this in every game, don't they? I mean, the next one I wanted to talk about was Fallout New Vegas, which is where Ben's going to come in and say, ah, that's actually Obsidian, right?
Yeah. So my understanding of New Vegas, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, is that they, the Bethesda were focusing on Skyrim at the time, was it?
I think so, yeah.
And so they wanted Fallout to continue, though. So they went, okay, Obsidian, you can do this one. Then Obsidian did it fucking well. But there's a real catch on that one. You know, we bang on about Metacritic or Meta Cricket, as Eddie likes to call it.
Yes.
And we put a lot of credence on that. It scored 84 on Metacritic. Now to get
New Vegas.
Their bonus from Bethesda, they had to score 85, and Obsidian almost went bust from it.
Oh wow!
So it just shows that Metacritic is incredibly important for games. A lot of people, especially through their publishers, are beholden to the Metacritic score as to whether they get paid properly.
Wow.
Obsidian did not from Fallout New Vegas, and I know it's widely regarded as one of the best Fallout games.
I'm shocked by that. What did Fallout 3 get? Do you know?
I'll check it out.
Have a look. That is shocking.
But you were a huge fan of New Vegas, weren't you, Eddie?
Yeah, you know what? Like, yes and no. There are parts
91.
Of it.
91. Okay.
But Fallout 4, 84 again.
And deserved.
Oh, yeah, because I know some people didn't like it, but no, Fallout New Vegas, there are bits that I loved about it and there are bits that I didn't like about it. Like how long did it come out after Fallout 3? It was
2010,
long,
2 years, right?
Yeah, 2010.
2 years.
All right, so yeah, okay, so that kind of what upset me, because the game didn't look too much better. But then again, there were amazing things, like the writing and storytelling again was incredible. They somehow even upped it up. Do you know what I mean? Like some of the characters you generally feel invested with.
Okay.
Factions for me, like making decisions and like kind of getting on side with each one of them and kind of avoiding some, that felt incredible. Didn't it feel, it felt more dark and gritty. I think like there were some missions that I went, whoa, that's a bit edgy. Do you know what I mean? Like the cannibalism shit. And I thought, wow, that's, it just seemed dark. You know, like Fallout 3 seemed like serious kind of, but this one felt darker and grittier.
This is actually something I loved about New Vegas, was the setting was so much brighter and more hopeful.
Yeah.
But you're right that a lot of the detail, a lot of the minutia was a lot darker.
Yeah, maybe.
I'd like that Fallout game then, because the thing about the Fallout games for me was that it's just a bit depressing. I know with all the mods, you can actually get mods that brighten up.
Let me get to Fallout 4, baby.
Yeah, well, there you go. I mean, I know you can do all of that, but maybe I would have been more interested in New Vegas, I suppose.
Well, New Vegas did have, I think it's the first Fallout that you could add mods to it, wasn't it, Pete? I don't know, actually.
Maybe you could do it in 3. So.
Yeah.
I'm sure you can do it in 3 now. I believe it was the first
one. You probably can now. But no, I remember going through Fallout New Vegas and being able to mod shit. So
well, I think maybe because Bethesda are known for releasing buggy games, to say the least, creating a community around people that fix their games. Let's say that.
It's a very wise move.
So release a game and say, ah, over to you guys.
Yeah, okay.
Our audience can do the work for us.
Yeah, that's what seems to happen anyway.
But I think one of the key things I liked with New Vegas was the fact that at least, I mean, more so in 4, but even in 3, power armor became a bit too common. Whereas in New Vegas, power armor was not only rare, but you didn't need it. It became a choice again. And the Ranger combat armor, which is the iconic visual of Fallout New Vegas, was one of the coolest alterations they made, in my opinion. I really liked that.
I mean, you can even get on the modding scene, you can get it for four. I think on the Xbox modding system, I think it's actually at least top three most downloaded thing of all the mods, which is huge if you think about it.
How would you guys rank the writing and the storytelling in New Vegas compared to the other Fallout games?
Oh, see, that's not fair, because I think Fallout 4 is the best of them.
I'm thinking
all right, settle down. Let's save that question for the end, shall we?
Well, I'm thinking I'm just trying to get a feel here, Pete, where this is Obsidian and they were just the publisher. This is Bethesda Softworks. This is not Bethesda developing this game. I just wanted to get a feel for what they're up against, because this is the game that people love, but it wasn't made by Bethesda.
That is a good point. And I think another point to add in there is that Obsidian are a descendant of the company that they bought Fallout from.
Yes.
Yeah, so I think it was BlackRock before Obsidian, and it was Interplay before that, who owned and created the first two Fallout games, which is why we didn't mention them, and why Fallout 3 is the first one on the list. And yeah, you could say in a way that with Fallout New Vegas, they went back to the originals with it. And I think Eddie's got a very fair point that the storyline in it is fantastic and very deeply interwoven. You've got lots of options for which way you want it to pan out, while the key elements will remain. But I think if we're going to compare it, we have to do it once we've talked about all of them.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, let's...
So fuck you, Ben.
Yeah, I've been put in my place.
Shut your mouth.
Trying to get a feel for Obsidian here, guys. No, just trying to feel for where the magic's gone. But no, it's okay.
Why do you play a Fallout game? Home, son, come back to
so he talks about the magic going just as we're going to come to Skyrim.
Even I can say that's... Yeah.
And I think we can all agree, even after last week's fervent debate, that Skyrim is one of the best games ever made. Let alone RPGs. It's one of the best games.
It's a fucking masterpiece.
It's an absolute masterpiece. It had huge hype and it actually lived up to it. It had an amazing trailer and it blew way past that. It's still going insanely strongly now with a modding community that just continues to create new content for a game that's almost 10 years old. They're even integrating into a new release. They're going to integrate Skyrim Grandma, who is a renowned YouTuber.
Yes.
They're bringing her into The Elder Scrolls 6. And that just tells you how much of a cultural movement Skyrim became, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, Skyrim was... Harping back to last week, we're arguing against Skyrim to perhaps a bit more competitive on our own games that we've chosen. But, oh my God, Skyrim is so good. And it stands up to this day. Like, you can play a new... There's a reason why it's released on Xbox 360, on Xbox One, on
VR.
It's on Switch. It's on everything. It's an insane game. You pick it up now, and I honestly think if it were released now... Just like nobody had ever heard of it released now, but I think it still do amazingly. Yeah. I don't think, because a lot of these games like Morrowind and Oblivion, like incredible at their time, absolutely pioneers, but they wouldn't stack up to this day so much because of, let's say, graphics, but also just like mechanics.
Well, here's one of the more interesting things as well is in that modding community around Skyrim. There is a select group building an expansion called Skywind with the intent to bring Morrowind onto the updated engine and updated graphics and updated everything of Skyrim. So we may actually get to see where the Morrowind stacks up. You'd get rid of all the painful mechanics that make you, when you try and go back to Morrowind, go, ooh, okay. This is showing that it's 15 years old.
This is rough.
almost 20 years old now. And as much as I loved it back then, trying to play it now is difficult. But I think were it to be on Skyrim system, I think suddenly you've got another incredible game there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that sounds like a great thing that the community's doing, to be honest.
And I think that's, I think you actually nailed it there, Ben, when you pointed out that if Skyrim was released now, it would still do amazingly well. That's the thing to hold on to when you think, has Bethesda lost the magic? That's the bit to remember.
Yeah, but when was Skyrim released? Sorry, I'm not.
2011.
Yeah.
So, and then after Skyrim comes Fallout 4. And here's, well, actually, no, there's one more in between, which we should talk about, that we should talk about, which is Elder Scrolls Online.
Okay.
I know an awful lot of people, big fans of the series, didn't like the move into multiplayer. They didn't like the concept of an MMO set in what they almost see as their own intellectual property now, because they've spent so long with the series. But the Elder Scrolls Online has actually carved out a pretty good niche for itself. I've played probably 50 hours and very much enjoyed it. It's something I'll go back to now and again, but like most MMOs, if you don't commit to it, you don't get as much out of it.
Yep.
So for someone who likes to vary his choices up or just play all the Total War series, it's not the best for me personally. But it's even now, 6 years after it was released, it's keeping up 500,000 players consistently.
That's insane. That is insane. How many copies did you say this one sold? You told me the other day how many copies this online game had sold, Elder Scrolls Online. And the fact that it's still got 500,000 players.
500,000 consistent players. And it was 15
That's
million copies.
Amazing. Mm. That is amazing. So a 30th of the player base that ever bought that game is still playing.
Still playing. Exactly.
That is fucking insane. Now, I know World of Warcraft does amazingly, and that's just on another level. And this was carving out the same path along those lines. Yeah. And people definitely commit to these types of games. And even at the last, to E3 last year, Elder Scrolls Online, a DLC for that was one of the showpiece things that Bethesda kind of rolled out. So it's so popular, but you just don't hear much about it. But my God, it does have a player count. That's awesome.
Exactly. And it shows you that they can do multiplayer and that they have a huge base for that. And I think that's important to note as we move forward into the next couple of games.
I'm going to go the other way. And I think releasing that was terrible.
Oh,
do you think that's held them back?
Yes, I think what they did there was shat on the faces of fans. I remember when that came out and I went, what the fuck is this? The Bethesda is renowned for their amazing single-player campaign games, and they've seen the success of games like World of Warcraft, and they've gone, let's tailor it so that we get money. And I think, I mean, you know what I thought then, and I've obviously been proven correctly, is when is the next Skyrim equivalent game going to be released? It's been 9 years and we have not had something else.
Yeah.
Between Skyrim and Oblivion was 5 years. It's been 9 and we've had a fucking 5-second little snippet of, oh, it might come out soon. Oh, it's been delayed till 2050.
That means it's
going to
be 3 years, yeah.
Yeah.
And, yeah, they did that because people were kicking off like that little snippet. But I think you're onto something, Eddie, because...
Okay.
Because you know what this is the precursor to, and we'll get onto it later. Mm. Fallout 76.
Yeah. And it's obviously the bigwigs at the top who don't give a fuck about gaming, who don't give a fuck about gamers, and they've gone, what is going to rake in the money? Oh, what made loads of money? Probably more than any other game, World of Warcraft. Let's fucking copy it. Oh, hang on. There was probably a game developer in that meeting and went, put his little hand up and went, oh, but we're Bethesda. We make amazing single-player games. You're fired. Get the fuck out. That's what's happened there. I can promise you someone has tried to stand up for their gamers and gone, why don't we stick to what makes us great? It fucking infuriates me. It infuriates
I mean, I think there's a few details to that you're not considering, but I think you should also talk about Fallout 4 first.
Before I go on the angry wagon.
Before you go onto the wagon.
Oh, right, Eddie's the only one here who isn't angry at Fallout 4, I think.
Yeah, that's quite actually funny. No, I thought Fallout 4 was the best one, actually. Yeah.
That's mental, I remember. Right? I don't play Fallouts, but that's mental, right, Pete?
Yeah, that's an insane viewpoint. But we'll let him go further down into the phone.
I mean, it's got 14 million units sold worldwide.
That's
so,
only because Fallout 3 was so fucking good.
Okay, I mean that's a big comment. But it's cool to not like Fallout 4. But I'm sorry, it's incredible. I remember looking at the back of the game pack when it came out. I never ever buy games full price, but I remember it on release day, and I went and looked at the back of the CD case, and then I went, oh, hang on, this actually looks fucking good. And then I typed in and I went, what's the new things? And I remember playing New Vegas, and I thought there's two things that I did not like. One, that you haven't got like a home base kind of area. I'm a sucker.
Always
for
a home base.
Always
you don't
a
like
home
leaving home
fucking
in the
base.
Game.
Jesus fucking wept. I mean, I'm really looking forward to Assassin's Creed because of the base building, but nothing else in that game appeals to me. But yeah,
that and taking cover. But going to the base building, I mean, the building and the kind of crafting of weapons and armor and all the shit that you can do with your base, even the like getting invaded, it was incredible. And yes, the storytelling isn't as good, and the replayability is so difficult to keep on going back to because you have to follow the same lines at the first hour of gameplay. But on top of all this, you've got the modding community, which has made this game insane. Ben, you said about good looking games. The first thing you download as a mod, Pete, I'm sure you did, was it's one of the beautiful Commonwealth mods, which makes all the trees green and all the grass green. And it looks incredible. And there's so many things with the modding industry for that game which made you pick up and play it again. There's the Conquest one. There's the where it kind of helps into the whole base building. It even makes it deeper. And that's what made that game great is I shouldn't say the mods made it great, but it did. It made the replayability.
So if there were no mods, Eddie, if there were no mods, would that be a great game?
Yes, because of the base building, but that's difficult because I am a sucker for that, so I'm always gonna love that. Yeah. I still think it was better than both the others. I thought it was brighter, it was more attractive. I mean, obviously the graphics were astronomically better. Yeah. No, I have sunk far more hours into Fallout 4. The map size of Fallout 4 compared to New Vegas. Like New Vegas as well felt so linear. It felt like you had to go down, then right, then up, and then you're at New Vegas. Fallout 4 is you go anywhere, and it's fucking massive.
See, I will say one thing in favor of Fallout 4, which was I've been to Boston. And been around that area. And it was actually, especially in comparison to 3, where you're in Washington, it was actually quite amazing how accurate a representation of Boston it felt. Mm. Because I almost felt like I knew my way around Boston from having played some of Fallout 4, which was quite a cool touch. And I've only ever had that before with Assassin's Creed in Florence. And Florence is a bit easier because it's changed a bit less, I think, than Boston has. Yeah, exactly. But otherwise, I think you hit the nail on the head with the storytelling element. The storytelling element in Fallout 4 was, in my opinion, the weakest. And it's because it steered you so much.
I agree with you. Yeah.
It's because you felt like you had less choice in which way you could go with the main arc. And don't get me wrong, you're right on the base building. And things like the castle in Fallout 4 and being able to rebuild that, they were wicked. Yeah. And they're the reason I did give it 40 or 50 hours, maybe. But
like the factions as well. How cool was that? Getting to like know to and side with. I know, Pete. The biggest qualm you had with it is that you wanted to side with the. So you wanted to side one, but make the other one happy, didn't you?
Yeah.
You wanted to be the railroad, but you didn't want to piss off the other ones or something.
I wanted Brotherhood on be Brotherhood, but not piss off the Minutemen and the railroad.
Oh right.
Because that seemed an obvious choice to have because they were all loosely on the same side.
Yes, they were.
But no, you can't. You have to slaughter everyone except the one you're going for.
Yeah, that did upset me. But as well, here's another thing that I wrote down that I completely forgot to mention. Survival mode. Fallout 4 had survival mode. With these games, you need survival game. Don't get me wrong, New Vegas with the modding.
New Vegas had it, And it's fantastic in that as well.
Yeah.
What is survival mode?
it's just eating and drinking really bad.
Yeah, so it makes you actually take care of yourself. So drinking, sleeping, and your wounds don't heal the same way.
Yeah,
you can't just like stimpak yourself and be fine. You have to be a bit smarter with it.
So what I've got from you saying this, Eddie, that this is your favourite Fallout, is the fact that it's got the weakest story. it looks good when you add the mods. It has a survival mode, which is just which was already in New Vegas, and you can build a base. So pretty much, it's a game which allows you to build a base. Therefore, it's the best one.
I think because it's so much bigger than the others, it made in Fallout New Vegas and Fallout 3. Well, actually, Fallout 3 did feel bigger. It's not, but it did feel bigger. You just felt like you'd done the whole game in an hour, and you felt like you were retracing old steps if you went and did another quest. Fallout 4, you didn't have that, and there wasn't a need to go and do those quests. Yes, you're right that the story in New Vegas was better, but in Fallout 4, you didn't feel the need to do the next stage. I think
you're just building a bigger base.
Yeah, fucking hate. And linking them to other bases and making sure that one's being defended. There was great fun in that. It's kind of the replayability of it. Like, Fallout New Vegas, you do it and it's done. Like, Fallout 4, you could literally play that game forever.
But you started off by banging on about great single player games. The man standing up in the boardroom saying, "No, we make great single player games. We don't do online games." But then the same breath, you said it's all about the base building. That's the replayability.
I also
that's what I prefer the most. I'm not saying that's the best element of it. Well, actually, I am.
It's not the storyline, not the grandeur.
You're making
it
sound like I don't think the story is that much worse than the other two. So we're making it sound like the storyline's terrible. I know, Pete, you thought it was. New Vegas storyline did make you feel invested in it, but at no point do I think, oh God, yeah, I want to do that again. There's no part of that. The problem with Fallout 4 is the character writing. You know, some of them are fucking garbage. Like, I wanted to, well, you could say that's good writing, because I wanted to punch a couple of them in the face. Like Paladin Dan's fucking hell, Jesus. Preston Garvey, oh my God, if he talked one more time, I just want to punch him in the groin. But
he did talk a lot.
Oh God, he's just so boring. And yeah, it was just badly done, but I still don't think that should be taken away from how good a game it was.
Okay, well I think at that point,
RimWorld doesn't have a story. Slander that, eh?
And you've never completed it either.
Never completed it. You don't know it hasn't got a story. You haven't reached the end.
Probably about 10 times now that I have completed it.
But I
think we've talked about the common themes linking all the games, which is the great moments, the replayability, and the scale they did.
Base building.
And in Eddie's case, the base building, yes. Dear God. I bet when that Skyrim expansion came out, they let you build your own house, you must have just
straight away.
Everywhere.
Was that Dawnguard or something? Yeah.
Hearthfire.
Oh, is that one? Yeah. I mean, I'd already got the mods that made you build your own town. Have you played that one? That one's fucking awesome. Yeah, big fan of that one.
Yeah.
Done all that, Pete.
Yeah. But I think this is the point where we get to your question again, Ben, with have they lost their magic? And I think it only exclusively comes from Fallout 76.
Well, does it, though? Because we'll talk about Fallout 76, but the whole thing about Bethesda, the time that it's been since they've released a good game, we'll talk about 76 in particular, because that really has put a rubber stamp on the point. But Fallout... A lot of people didn't really... When I played Skyrim, what I loved about Skyrim and what has carried on to games like Breath of the Wild and things like that is that you can basically just choose something to do of an evening. I can go on the internet, I can look at the wiki page, I can go, oh, I really want that thing. Like, I'd go after this enchanted mace or something like that. I go, I really want... I like the look of that. I'm going to go all the way over the map. I'm going to go there and get that thing. And it was magical. It was wonderful. Like, you could do that, and you could do that in Breath of the Wild, games that have taken so much from this.
Yeah,
but going forwards now, they haven't done it in so long, and there are other games out there that do it. And they and I'd argue as well that the engines that like Fallout 4 and Skyrim and games like that were using, like, they haven't developed the game engine like at all recently. And look at 76. Let's move on to 76, but look at it. I mean, it just looks just as shit as the other Fallout games.
Okay, that's going a bit far, because while I think we're going to agree with you on 76, you can't compare it to the other Fallout games. It's a completely different animal.
Yeah. I mean, let's quickly go over it. So 2.6 million units sold worldwide. I mean, that speaks fucking volumes. I mean, it's difficult. I've wrote a list of things that have got to mind.
Is that true? Is that fucking true?
I hope so. I got off their website.
You know, they were giving it away at one point. Like, game shops were giving it away with other things just to get rid of them.
Yeah, and I think this is what I mean by it's a hell of a blip. You know, it's buggy and glitchy.
Yeah.
I mean, all Bethesda games have bugs and glitches, and fortunately we have modders to sort them out. But Fallout 76 takes the cake with that. It's a ridiculous level of it. And do you remember when it first released and they had the special edition that came with a bag?
Yeah.
It was meant to be like a canvas like survival bag, and it what turned up was nothing at all like that. That kind of feels like what we've gone with from Fallout, any of the Fallout games beforehand, 276. You thought you were getting a fantastic item and you didn't.
They sold down everything about Fallout games down the river. You know what I mean? Like, it was, you know, it's weird because maybe they looked at Fallout 4 and saw that their highest mod selling mod was the one that made it bright and happy. But fuck me, did they go the wrong way. Honestly, when I loaded the game for the first time, I went, what the fuck is this? It looked like a Disney game. And it was just so bright and happy. And oh, God.
Switch game.
It was like a fucking Switch game. I wish they had it on Switch, I wouldn't have bought it. But yeah, I mean, the combat felt worse even still. There were no NPCs. The world felt dead. The world felt empty. Like, the map was fucking garbage. And you knew I was going to come here. The base building. Holy fucking shit, God. The base building. What have they done there? Oh, let's make a blueprint and you can put your base everywhere. That's not how buildings work. Who the fuck at Bethesda went, oh, is it gonna? No. What? Oh, my fucking God. Let's put a blueprint and then make it elsewhere. And it just appears. Oh, good idea, Dave. No. Who thought that was a good idea?
Right. So Fallout 76 was not a good game.
No.
Nobody thinks that.
No.
Fallout 4 came out in 2015 and was arguably, like, if you've got a world-class reputation for making games,
which they do.
Pete, riddle me this. Do you think Fallout 4 fits the description of world-class game?
You've changed it to world-class on me there. Fallout 4 is still an excellent game for many people. It was not to my taste.
Okay, so let's just say they've made an excellent game in 2015.
Yeah.
Right. My point on this is we are just going to tick over into 2021 to make my point seem even more valid.
Why not 22, Ben?
I don't know. No. We're in the 2020s.
We're in the
2020s. Now, so how long have you been in your current job, Pete?
A month.
How long have you been in your previous job?
2 years.
Okay. What about the job before that?
5.5.
Okay, so it's been 6 years since they made an arguably really good game. Now, how many people of that team, so just like the cells in my body reproduce every 7 years, it's not even the same fucking company.
Okay,
like, they haven't made a good, game in the time that it's taken for the one remaining employee that was there at the time for all their cells to reproduce. They haven't even made another fucking good game.
Okay. I take your point. But if you think Todd Howard has let anyone out of the basement where they're making Starfield in the last 6 years, you're mad. Because that's all that's been happening. They haven't left the room. They're still building that game, and they will be until it's finished.
My other point is, We've recently had The Outer Worlds, which has come out, and that went straight to Game Pass. Absolutely brilliant. Like, that was made by Obsidian. That's why I've drawn the earlier mentioned about storytelling there. I played The Outer Worlds. Very good game. It was slightly shorter, probably about 20, 25 hours. Yeah. But it's... I mean, you could tell from the start, it's basically a Fallout game in space.
Yeah.
But it had better feel. It wasn't as depressing for me. but the storytelling was great. And it seemed to me that was Obsidian kind of just putting themselves out there again and just saying, like, yeah, don't forget, we make great Fallout games, and you don't make any good Fallout games anymore.
It was a huge kind of middle finger to Fallout, wasn't it? Really, it was a look at Fallout 76 and look at what we've done. I mean, I didn't like that game. I didn't, but it was better than Fallout 76, so I bought it.
yeah.
Well, so that kind of says all you need to know about where the fuck Bethesda have gone.
I kind of think that Bethesda are only relevant these days. Because they obviously have the Elder Scrolls back, and if they brought out new Elder Scrolls, I'd be all in, absolutely.
And
they publish games now. Like, they publish a lot of cool games. They publish Doom, Wolfenstein games. These games, like, and they're absolutely class. Like, the games they publish are better than the games they fucking make.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think your point about not being the same team is relevant, but I don't think that's where they fucked up. I reckon somewhere along the line, their business model's changed. Because you look at the game, Elder Scrolls Online, and you look at Fallout 76, it goes against everything that what they were producing. It goes against everything that they kind of stood for, and it's gone right for the money hole. So I reckon their business
model's changed. Right, the money hole, baby.
I reckon they've gone, what makes money? Let's forget what we are. Let's forget what we stand for. Let's forget what people have, you know, spent their hard-earned money on.
Dave stood up in the boardroom.
Dave stood
him,
up for the casual gamer. And
fuck Dave.
Get rid of Dave. Get him out of the basement. Chuck him out the front door.
Dave's a dick.
Dave's a dick. Sue him as well. Why the fuck not?
What?
Sue everyone else. And I think, look, don't get me wrong. Because of my love for the games in the past, I believe that Elder Scrolls 6 will be good, but I wouldn't be surprised if they fucked my hopes over one more time.
But I think that's the key point we've got to come back to, is I don't think anyone can say they've lost their magic until we see Elder Scrolls 6. I just don't think you can do it, because you've both said it already, and I'm obviously on board that is a day one purchase for me.
Yeah.
The moment that game releases, and it's still years away because, you know, Starfield is, well, still years away as well, most likely. So it's still a while to come. But until that game drops, and until we get to an end to the speculation and we find out what the follow-up to Skyrim is, I don't think you can say that Bethesda have lost it. Because at least with the Elder Scrolls series, and you've got to remember, by the way, that Bethesda Softworks passed off Elder Scrolls Online to their parent company, ZeniMax. So they don't actually run that one. But until we see the original studio, or whatever is left of their reproducing cells, bring out Elder Scrolls 6, can't say it's done.
My argument is not that you can say I'll say they haven't necessarily lost their magic, but there is no evidence that they still got it.
Well said.
That's the standpoint I think that's the standpoint that we have to draw on this, because I too long's passed, and I will be with you day one buying that game at Starfield. I'll buy that as well. I'll be all in. But in the same respect, you're looking for them to tank. Like, you're waiting for them to tank. There's so much expectation on those games. Elder Scrolls 6 has to be fucking perfect. It's basically like Cyberpunk has to be perfect, pretty much, because everyone knows it. But I know it's going to be great, because CD Projekt Red have done The Witcher 3 and all the expansions, and my god,
Did you like The Witcher 3? Did you?
Well, The Witcher.
I didn't get that impression, Ben. I didn't get that impression.
The combat was dog shit. But you know what I mean? They've made a great game. They've made a universally acclaimed, amazing, incredible game and expansions. And that's pretty much what they've been doing. And Cyberpunk. So, like, we have complete faith that that's going to be a fucking epic game. But my God, if we had to put if we had to say over 90 or under 90 on a Metacritic score for Elder Scrolls 6, and you had to put money down, you have to put $5,000 down on over or under. Where would you go?
Over.
I'd go to my parents to get some money.
I would instantly go over.
Yeah.
I think even just the teaser trailer, even just the music from that tiny 36-second teaser tells me they still know what captures it. They still know their strong points. They still know it's the big moments. It's the sweeping scale of it. They still know all the key elements there. And the fact that it's going to be a single-player game means they're going back to their strongest point.
I think to flip it, I would go over. But Starfield, I'd go under.
Oh, God, yeah. Starfield, yeah. Definitely under. Starfield is a certainty to be under, surely.
Yeah.
I
think over as well. I know that I've just slandered them. But yeah. I think, right, Elder Scrolls Online, I was disgusted by it. But it did fucking well. It did really well. So they didn't learn their lesson there. And then Fallout 76, fucking hell. I can't think of a more famous game that tanked so much. I generally can't. Do you remember the outrage when it came out? It was fucking rioting in the streets practically. Yeah. And I think they've looked at that. They've had to reshuffle and rethink everything. And then bringing a single player game, I think this could be huge. I think it could be massive.
And this is, I think that's the conclusion we can really reach here, is that Elder Scrolls 6 is going to be fundamental for Bethesda.
It's huge. Huge.
It's going to be a watershed moment.
If they fuck it up again, I'll start be saying this.
Now you're by Elder Scrolls 7.
In 18 years' time when it comes out, I'm going to be saying the exact same thing. But if the next one comes out and it's shit, fuck it.
The key thing is to say... is to say, where would Dave put his money?
Yeah. Like,
money is the important factor here, because I can talk about Bethesda all day, losing the magic and all that kind of stuff, but as we've gone down this route, would you put money on Elder Scrolls being over 90 on Metacritic? And I would back that side rather than the other.
And that, I think, is the key.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's enough, don't you? I think we've summed up the Bethesda issue pretty well.
We've gone in. I don't know if we did that well.
We've gone in. We've flip flopped. We've come out pretty much the same place.
I know where I started, but I'm not really sure I like where I ended.
And that's exactly how I like to leave the show. GG gamers.
GG.
Right. How do I lead into this?
Welcome to Grumpy Gamers. God
damn it. Every time there's a pause.